This is Weekend Edition from NPR News. I'm Scott Simon.
In the new era that is coming to Iraq, your country will no longer be held captive to the will of a cruel dictator. You will be free, free to build a better life instead of building more palaces for Saddam and his sons, free to pursue economic prosperity without the hardship of economic sanctions, free to travel and free to speak your mind, free to join in the political affairs of Iraq.
Now we want to give you the chance to rebuild your country, to rebuild your lives, to give your families a chance of that better future. So it is in the spirit of friendship and goodwill that we now offer our help.
President George Bush and British Prime Minister Tony Blair speaking this week on Iraqi television. Their pre-recorded statements were broadcast on a channel formerly controlled by the Iraqi government. That says something. NPR senior news analyst Dan Shore joins us. Good morning, Dan.
Good morning, Scott.
And Allied forces moved into Baghdad, actually, as we were on the air a week ago. Saddam's statues were toppled. His government is in rubble and has scattered. What's left for Allied forces to do before they declare a full victory?
Oh, well, you know, they have the three major cities of Iraq, Baghdad, Mosul, Basra. But there are centers and pockets of resistance still in various parts of the country, apparently especially somewhere up near the Syrian border. And so I think they've got to, or at least so they say, control the entire country before they would proclaim victory. Furthermore, there's this orgy of looting, a situation close to anarchy that has started, and it's very difficult to speak of complete victory as long as that's going on.
And in Najaf, two Muslim clerics were stabbed to death by a mob at a public meeting that was intended to show this is a new country, we're going to get along together. How well prepared and equipped are U.S. and British forces to control the situation?
Well, it's very interesting. They seem to be not very well prepared for something that might happen there, and they were taken by surprise. I must tell you, I have to quote to you the remark of Defense Secretary Rumsfeld about all the looting.
Yes.
Freedom's untidy, and free people are free to commit mistakes and to commit crimes. I think that the Secretary would really prefer that we devote our attention to these wonderful images like the statue of Saddam Hussein being toppled, or in some places, American forces, Marine soldiers being greeted with great warmth and flowers and all the rest of it, in some places, though not in other places. But can't help it. If the day after the toppling of the Saddam Hussein statue, which was the big picture of the day, the next picture is some poor Iraqis running through the street, or not running through the street, dragging pianos, door frames, and so on, which, by the way, have been largely concentrated on presidential palaces and government buildings. It is almost as though, having lived under this repression for this long, there's this outburst now directed against authority, and saying you do it by just taking what they got.
Has there been a different approach in some British forces in Basra?
Well, the British are being praised a great deal for the way they dealt with the Basra situation, which was very gradually, in a very British way. They came in slowly. They made sure they knew that they controlled the city. They got rid of the resistance. And then immediately they began turning to Iraqis, to people to form a city council and to try to take authority. They moved towards establishing a post-Saddam authority among Iraqis faster than anything that happened up north.
U.S. Marines are not foot patrolmen. When does it become necessary to bring in some kind of policing force? And is that necessarily American and British?
Well, Marines, soldiers may not be policemen, and it's been a trouble for a long, long time that they don't like doing police duties. But in spite of that, they've been forced to have Marines start patrolling Baghdad because they have to have some show of authority. I think what they would like to try to do is to see if they can reconstitute the police force as it was under Saddam Hussein, but they would have to go through some very careful checking of all these people before they were able to do that. But clearly, with all the planning, exquisite planning for this, what I was going through, the one thing they didn't prepare for is what happens during that immediate vacuum of power that happens when Saddam is gone. If he is gone, by the way, there are stories now out there saying that the chatter being heard among some of the people who worked for Saddam suggests they're talking on the basis of their belief that he's dead. But I mean, no confirmation. This chatter business sometimes leaves me a little cold because I wonder how much chatter is put on for our benefit. But anyway, latest rumor is that Saddam Hussein may not be alive.
How important would it be to find his bones and dental records? Or not. As long as he is not confirmed to be dead, is there the possibility that the image of Saddam could be used to rouse opposition?
I think that's a very good question. I mean, look what Osama bin Laden has been doing, the name of Osama bin Laden. People who live by supporting him will continue to support him as long as they think he might be alive. I think if there is any danger of a guerrilla action or something underground, people taking to the hills to continue fighting, I think it would collapse immediately once it were known for sure that Saddam Hussein was dead. And as long as he is not known to be dead, there will be some who will do suicide bombing.
Amid the pictures of celebration and people declaring, even people who had been opposed to the war among European nations, that they are glad to see Saddam Hussein gone, how important does it become for Allied forces to locate weapons of mass destruction or stores of chemical weapons?
Well, Scott, this war was started because there was supposed to be these weapons of mass destruction, and therefore, as an act of self-defense against possibly some imminent use of these weapons, a war was declared. If you can't find the weapons, which were the reason for the war, it becomes at least a little bit embarrassing. They would dearly love to find these weapons, because after, if not, you get France and Russia and Germany, who've been meeting in St. Petersburg anyway with their own little coalition, all saying, so why did you do it? You had no authority to do it. And you said you did it to find weapons. What weapons? I think they want to find them badly.
Is the answer different for Iraqis? Are Iraqi citizens inclined to care as much about that?
Say that again?
Are Iraqi citizens now inclined to care so much about whether or not weapons of mass destruction are?
I don't know I don't think I've heard anything about what Iraqis in general are reacting to that.
Let me ask you about something not altogether unrelated. North Korea, which had said it would only talk to the United States about scaling back its nuclear program, now says that it might be amenable to multilateral talks.
Well, that's true. The United States has proposed multilateral talks. They really want to get involved with the neighbors of Korea, China, Russia, and South Korea as well, and not take a leading part in this. For some reason, for North Korea, it's been very important for prestige or whatever that they want to talk face-to-face, directly, one-on-one with the United States. The U.S. has refused to do it. Now the North Koreans are saying, well, okay, maybe we can do it in a larger context. And that may be an interesting move from people who may have been scared by seeing what happened in Iraq.
More than 100 people have died around the world as the result of severe acute respiratory syndrome, or SARS. An American man this week in China died of the illness, and a respected doctor in Beijing says the Chinese health ministry has lied about the number of the people in his country who are afflicted.
You know, I've been thinking about that. You know, you speak of biological warfare, and the real biological warfare that is being fought by nature against us. But if that is so, then the answer to the biological warfare is to have better cooperation among nations in order to be able to do something in the public health service field. And when you get China lying about it, then you say, we really should send in an investigating force to try to stop that kind of thing.
Okay. Thanks, Dan. I'll be away for next month in Iraq.
I understand. All I can say is what people say. Take care.
Thanks. Dan Chor.